You're listening to The Jeff Horovitz Show.
Welcome to the Jeff Horovitz Show. This is Mark Howitt sitting in for Jeff. He had a couple things to take care of on his small farm down in Camp Verde, and so I'm filling in for him today. We've got some special guests in the studio. I say welcome to Joe Hazel.
Hi, Joe here.
And Adam Shimoni.
Good morning.
We're here to talk today a lot about bikes, but I want to get a little bit of background on you guys. Adam, you served on Flagstaff City Council. You were vice mayor for a while. When was that? What is a vice mayor? Give us a little, just a little peek into that part of your life.
Yeah, so I began organizing when I woke up to the reality of local politics and the importance of local engagement back in 2013. Ran for council the first time in 2016 in an attempt to wake up my own peers and wake them up to local politics. Lost to Charlie Odegaard by 59 votes.
Ooh, that's close.
Ran again in 2018, and we crushed it. We got vice mayor, most votes, which gives you added responsibility to, you know, kind of step in when the mayor isn't available, which occurs more often than not. And it was just an amazing experience to get an inside look at how the city works and that kind of leadership, and really pushed me to grow as an individual and as an elected official, to really not just think about myself and my own thoughts and opinions, but the well-being of the whole. So I just completed my 4 years last December, and life is great.
Nice. Yeah, so city council goes for 4 years.
Right.
Mayor, of course, goes for two. You become vice mayor how?
By getting the most votes.
The most votes out of the people running for council.
In that specific election cycle. And then the vice mayor hat or responsibility changes every 2 years. So the new group coming in, you pass it on to the next highest elected individual.
So you are basically vice mayor for 2 years.
Correct.
Out of your four. Nice.
Yeah.
Appreciate your service. Joe, real quick, what's your background?
Well, I was a research geologist at the university here, NAU, for almost three decades in... got involved with Flagstaff Biking Organization about 10 years ago and just been doing that ever since.
Now, you, Flagstaff Biking Organization is a nonprofit, right?
That's right.
And so you have a board, and I believe you're on the board. Is that correct? And Adam, you're on the board now.
Correct.
You've left city council, now you're serving in the private sector, but it's the nonprofit sector.
Correct.
And then who else is involved on the board with this?
Do you want all the names, or?
Well, I'm just curious. Yeah, what names would we know?
Melissa Dunstan's been there since.
Oh yeah, she's
one.
Been around forever.
Yep. Mm-hmm. She does all the books.
Yep.
And Anthony Quintile has been there since day one. There were a couple of founding members that have since moved on. A number of folks have helped over the years, and like a lot of things, Flagstaff folks come and go. Interests change. Jolene Hayes is heavily involved in the Bike Month.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Flagstaff, we should talk about that here in a little bit, the Bike Month, May Bike Month.
And we've got another new board member, Benjamin Keeler, who's helping me with volunteer events, and he's also helping with Bike Month. And did I forget anyone?
Stephanie?
Stephanie? Oh, gosh, Stephanie does all this social media, graphic design.
So I got to say, FBO, Flagstaff Biking Organization, really does a good job of, you know, the bike to work week or month. Excuse me.
We went a month during the pandemic. Well, we canceled it
that
during
first
the pandemic,
okay.
The first year. And then because it was hard to get in-person engagement, and we went with the bike month approach as opposed to bike week.
Yeah, and there's various competitions, right, to see who bikes to work the most, and various prizes and
raffles,
and then
doing whatever we can to encourage people to get on their bikes.
I always enjoy the
out of cars.
There's a big gear sale down at Heritage Square every year that I'm assuming you still do that, where everybody brings down their old stuff, sells it, swaps it,
yeah,
whatever.
That was the first Sunday of the month of May. Generally, and that was the way we would kick off Bike Week, and then now Bike Month. But a great community event. All kinds of folks come out of the woodwork for that one.
I've picked up a few good parts there myself. Mm-hmm. and unloaded a few good parts.
Yeah.
And then throughout the year, you do trail days where you ask for volunteers to come out and help to build the trails. And you don't have to actually know anything. We'll talk about trail days a little bit later in the show. But sure, it's a great chance for the public to come out and put some, you know, sweat and tears and whatever else into building some trails. And then you get to ride the trails that you help build or hike them or whatever type of user you are.
Yeah, that's a pretty awesome thing. It's community engagement, and folks get to put some sweat equity into the trails that they're recreating on.
So FBOs, I know it's real big bike to work month now, and you got your summer trail building days. What's going on in the winter with FBO?
You know, one thing that we do, FBO does all year long, which I'm very involved with, is just advocacy. Advocacy at the city level, advocacy at the county level, working with the Forest Service, a lot of letters of recommendation and of support. You know, the city really leans on us at times for support for grant proposals that they're asking for, you know, funds, hundreds at times, millions of dollars for road infrastructure projects for the most part, but yet that do incorporate quality bicycle and pedestrian infrastructure as well. But a lot of our roads cost a lot of money. But I'm proud to say that a lot of the city planning that is taking place today is incorporating bike ped in a way that it hasn't in the past.
Yeah, it's really exciting. I actually, as you know, I served on the Bicycle Advisory Committee myself. We have a Pedestrian Advisory Committee. We have a Transportation Commission. And all of that helps to advise the city council saying, you know, here's people that are quasi-experts in their various fields, and here's their opinions.
Correct.
And that's usually highly respected by council.
It is. There is a gap, you know, maybe not to get into it too much, but, you know, there is a disconnect between what the committees and the commissions are saying and pushing for and what actually reaches council at times.
Right.
And it's something that needs to be worked on. But, yes, those commissions are extremely important, and the expertise, like yourself and others who are serving, are very much valued and appreciated and influence decisions.
Yeah, I always tell everybody, you know, if you can get on a city council of whatever interests you, it could be commission, on the housing commission. I'm sorry, I said on council. If you can get on council, yeah, that's great too. But get on one of the several commissions. I forget how many there are. There's something.
26?
20, yeah, and it seems like constantly growing. Seems like they're always adding a new one. But it's citizens volunteering the time to say, hey, we're going to look at these. And really, it's delegating a lot of the work so the council doesn't have to do everything, know everything, be experts at everything.
Right. And I let people know all the time that those commissions and committee meetings are open to the public. Yep. And there's public comment on basically every agenda item that they're going to be confronting. And your opinion and your perspective and expertise really, really matters, right?
It does.
Whether it's at a council meeting or a committee meeting or a commission in between, you know, go engage, check it out, do something different, and speak up.
Speak up, yeah. Let your voice be heard. Go.
Yep.
The commission meetings are run just like a city council meeting.
Correct.
And you have public participation time. And if there's something that's not on the agenda, you can go there at the beginning of the meeting that's open to anything you want to talk about for your 3 minutes, I think it is.
Yep.
And you can bring up a topic that maybe wasn't thought about and can be talked about later on. Joe, you're also in an interesting group, and we kind of teased this out yesterday, the Flagstaff Trail Fairies, which I think is the funniest name.
Right.
What is a trail fairy? How did this thing start? What do you guys do?
Well, it actually goes back some 10, 15 years ago, there were a lot of folks interested in steep technical trails. That is a user experience not really found in the Flagstaff Ranger District, at least not officially,
right,
per se.
A lot of social trails out there.
A lot of social trails. And so a group of guys and kind of loosely affiliated with Flagstaff Biking Organization, you know, we had some give and take going back and forth, like, okay, the idea was like, how can we partner with the Forest Service, gain a little bit of trust, and go legally go work on trails, because it's actually illegal to work on any trail without partnering with the Forest Service as, you know, as the land manager.
Yeah, and that's been a big thing in the past, is a lot of people have gone out and said, I'd like a trail here or there, and they start cutting it in, cutting branches, digging rocks.
Yeah,
and a lot of those people didn't have the experience to know how to make a sustainable trail.
Well, not only do they not know what they're doing generally, and the fact that it's illegal,
right?
It's us not taking into account the resource. There might be other issues there. Mexican spotted owl,
archaeological resources.
Oh yeah, right. Archaeological sites. Lots of different things that may not occur to the average person that is aware of these things. So 10 years ago or so, we started partnering with the Forest Service on Sundays, and we would work together, and we were working on Sunset Trail. So up high, access was difficult. We'd hike in a ways, and sometimes carrying like a generator and a rock drill, and we worked on the affectionately known as the Hobbit Switchbacks.
The Hobbit Forest.
And the Rock Garden. And so that was kind of the test period. And then eventually we were able to get our own volunteer agreements. And I say our because I am involved with that group.
Yep.
But it's not actually it's only loosely affiliated with FBO. We help FBO does with getting those agreements in place and stuff like that. But those guys are very much doing their own thing. But all in agreement, all projects are agreed upon ahead of time and vetted. And currently the trail fairies are working on a Jedi Trail to bring that bring it up to Forest Service standards to bring it into the system.
Yeah, so Jedi Trail, for our listeners here in Flagstaff who ride mountain bike or hike might know where that is, but it's been a really neat trail. It's been in there for a long time, but it was a social trail. It was put in without authorization, and now the Forest Service is allowing it to be upgraded, fixed, and then to bring it into the system trails.
You could call it adopted.
It's
part of a bigger overall project, and I don't know if you want to talk about that now.
Yeah, so that's the Mount Eldon Dry Lake Hills,
correct,
project, which is rerouting a bunch of trails that were having erosion issues. Brookbank was the classic.
And building new ones.
And building new ones as well, yeah.
And that project has actually been 15 years in the making, and was the environmental assessment was signed last year, and then hit the ground going gangbusters, feet running, and we're now in year two
of actually putting the trails in and on the groundwork.
Yeah, both new trails, but also rerouting system trails and adopting some of the social trails,
right,
that meet the desired experience, but as part of the project area also. Some areas were left alone, and there are going to be no trails.
Mm-hmm.
And so to leave like bigger, undisturbed wildlife blocks.
Right, yeah, because if you have a trail network that's like a spider web, you kind of just chase out all the wildlife, and you don't get to appreciate what's there. It gets chased away to some degree.
Yeah, it's hard to define, but there is a carrying capacity to how many trails you can have within a given footprint.
Right, right. So one thing I appreciated recently was, so those who've been in Flagstaff for a long time, and even those who come up here to mountain bike from Sedona or Prescott or Cottonwood, everybody's familiar with Schultz Creek Trail. And for years, I heard that was originally put in by dirt bikes years and years ago. Don't know the exact history on it, but I do know it ran right next to the stream, right down in the wash.
Yep.
And there's been a lot of work. It seems like it started a number of years ago and rerouting that trail to get it up out of the wash and onto the side bank, call it up higher on the hill.
Yeah.
Out of the
flood area. I
mean, I could
give a little history there.
Yeah,
I mean,
please. It goes back fascinating.
It goes back to the 1930s with the original Civilian Conservation Corps had a camp there.
Oh.
And you can still see the foundations.
Oh, kind of near the bottom of Schultz.
That's right. And they were there, I don't know how long, but I believe their primary purpose was to build the Schultz Pass Road, the Forest Service 420 Road.
Yep.
And but as part of that, they built a road that goes about halfway up, and the I think you are correct. The moto guys in the mid late 70s, early 80s pushed in a trail, like the road was getting reclaimed by nature, and
yep.
they pushed in a trail up, and then they were looking for ways to get up to Freedland Prairie Road, and so they would love to ride their dirt bikes around the mountain.
Oh yeah,
so Schultz Creek was part of that, and then in the early 80s, the Forest Service it started to look at the whole area, and in 1987, I think the official Dry Lake Hills Eldon Trail system was dedicated, and Schultz Creek became an official system trail. And unfortunately for the moto guys, that's when they kind of kicked out of there. And as part of the Forest Service management plan, everything east of Schultz Creek or Schultz Pass Road became non-motorized, and then west in Fort Valley was the motorized trails.
Yeah, actually, when I moved, I ride bike and hike and like riding horses, and I also ride motorcycle, you know, steel horse. Yep. I remember riding up Schultz Creek back when it was still legal, and enjoying that, and it was a lot of fun. But eventually, there got to be too many users. You know, when there was nobody out there.
Yeah, and you're right. And okay, so I've been mountain biking in Flagstaff since the late 80s, and which dates me, I guess. But I don't know if you remember, but in 1992, Schultz Creek Road was closed to downhill mountain bike traffic.
The road itself?
For the summer. No, the trail.
The trail, okay.
Because I think there were more equestrians in Flagstaff at the time, but mm-hmm. You know, mountain bikes were just coming on the scene, and, you know, the land manager didn't quite know what to do with this new use for trails on the system, and there were a lot of complaints, and a lot of mountain bikers just kind of going, hey, these bikes are great.
Right.
And
every time something new comes along, because the real mountain bike, I mean, really came out in the 80s, but and it's since developed quite a bit since then, but all of a sudden, it's another type of user out there in the woods.
And it's an legitimate use of public lands.
For sure.
And so it was just sort of coming to what to do with it and how to manage that use. And also kind of ties into something we might want to talk about today, you know, trail etiquette.
Trail etiquette is definitely on the agenda for today.
Yeah, and so... But just to circle back to something you said earlier about the reroutes, realignments of Schultz Creek, starting in, people don't realize now that just about 100% of that trail has been relocated.
Almost, yeah. It has since I moved here anyway.
Yeah, and that started in like the late 90s, 2000, and part of the idea was to get it out of Beb Willow habitat. The creek bottom is one place in the region that Beb Willow grows.
Okay.
So to get it out of Beb Willow habitat, but also in what is really becoming evident to folks these days is the sedimentation issue.
Right.
And now it's about, thankfully the trail was moved because of now the post-fire flooding and stuff. Folks can see it. Like there's sediment filling up those detention basins that they built last year.
Right.
Already. Mm-hmm.
So for those who are listening from Flagstaff are quite familiar with this problem over off of 180, where on a big flood, the water actually comes right across 180, hits the residential units across the highway, and it's been flooding them out because of the fire.
Well, because of the fire, the sediment load that it's carrying, and then all the debris clogs the culverts.
Yep.
And they've since, ADOT actually fixed that crossing and put in a bigger culvert.
Okay.
Which is why the road was kind of, well, not one lane, but pushed over by the fire station. And if you haven't been on Eldon Lookout Trail, they're just about done with that, where Schultz Creek crosses under there was like, I don't know, an 18-inch pipe.
Right.
That was trying to contain 1,000 CFS.
That's
not going to work.
Yeah.
So now it's like three, I don't know what they are, 30-inch pipes, but... should convey that water if, you know, we get another flood like last summer.
Yeah, and it's actually kind of an exciting project. Locally, we call that the Y, where Eldon Lookout Road and Schultz Creek Road come together. And everybody parked there on the dirt for a long time. And it's actually private property, that little corner is.
Yep.
But the city-owned land beyond that, that used to actually be a municipal golf course. And you could actually still go out there and find the putting greens.
Wow.
And the fairways.
And the fairways, yeah. And so, I don't know, it was a city course. I don't know if it was 9 or 18 holes, but you can still go out and find them.
I think it was
9. Yeah. And, you know, there's talk about doing what's happened now, which is put in an official parking area on the city land. And there was a lot of delays, like, when are we going to do this? When are we going to do this? I'm kind of thankful for that. Was the bright side of the flood, is now we've actually got parking that's on the city land and doesn't no longer on the private land that belongs to the owner.
Yeah, the contractor is part of the drainage basin project. Wrapped it up with kind of a new trailhead area, which I think they did a really nice job with.
They did. The parking's much more efficient, and because actually it's not really lined spaces or anything, but people know how to park. And back in the old days, it was just a mishmash of cars pulling in. And
yeah, there's 70 or 80 cars there on a busy weekend.
Yeah, it's really a fantastic project. You had mentioned the no motorized is allowed east of Schultz Pass Road.
That's right.
So that came along with what's called the TMR, the Travel Management Rule. And yep. I was involved with that, sitting in the Forest Service.
Oh, huh.
Fighting tooth and nail because as a dirt bike rider,
sure,
you don't almost want... all of our trails went away, and they reduced it down to about 20 miles.
Yeah, you don't want to get lose access.
Lose access is what everybody's concerned is. Whatever kind of trail you are, you don't want to lose access. And dirt bikes were losing it quite a bit of access.
Mm, sure.
It used to be a wide open forest. Cross-country travel was allowed everywhere. And with the TMR, they said, no, we're going to keep dirt bikes to certain trails, mostly the Fort Valley system and over in the Kelly system. You'll have trails in Flagstaff called Rocky Moto or Upper Moto, Lower Moto. Moto means it was put in by motorized, but also those trails are also still motorized. You can still go on them.
Yep, that's right.
And a lot of people, hikers aren't aware of that. Sometimes bikers, equestrians aren't aware that they're allowed in the Fort Valley trail system, the Chimney Trail, Flue Trail, Damper, all that. But if you're a rider like me, you've got to remember you are on the... You're the bottom of the feeding chain. So if somebody comes along, you have to yield to everybody in all directions at all times.
You know, it's public land, and there should be a piece of it where, I guess it depends on what are agreed upon as suitable uses, but there needs to be a place for the OHV crowd to go. Hikers have a wilderness area they can go to find solitude and not have to listen to dirt bikes if that really is a big thing for them. Turns out equestrians actually like the motorized trails because they can hear them coming up behind them as opposed to, say, a mountain bike where, you know, they can be pretty quiet.
We need to touch on this. I'm going to take a little break because we're coming up against a commercial break, but I do want to touch on that kind of trail etiquette, which we're getting into a little bit here. And a lot of
overlap.
Headphones on the trail, sneaking up on runners. I've startled a few myself. We'll be back in a few.
I've worked with Desert Gold Exchange because I know they keep their overhead low, and I know they pass those savings on to you, so that way they can deliver more gold and silver directly to your door than just about anywhere else. Justin and his family-owned Desert Gold Exchange, they trade exclusively in physical, tangible metals, a commodity that can't be erased or hacked, which is really important nowadays. Now, when you call Desert Gold Exchange, by the way, I mentioned the Jeff Horvitz Show, they're going to help you understand pricing and the difference between various coins and actual bullion. Call Desert Gold Exchange. Like I said, mention the Jeff Horvitz Show. Get a free investor's kit, 888-852-4343. Call them up. Learn how to get more physical gold and silver for your investment, 888-852-4343. That's Desert Gold Exchange, 888-852-4343. Is the Biden economic disaster hitting your household a bit harder than you expected? Is inflation killing your personal budget? Now, Just Wireless was here for you in 2009, and they are here for you in 2023. Why would you pay full price for a new smartphone when you can get a great refurbished phone at Just Wireless and save a whole bunch of money? Or if you're like me, I've taken my smartphone to Just Wireless to get it repaired. They've taken care of cracked screens, charging port problems. They can also change out that battery. Check out Just Wireless's two locations in Flagstaff, across from the Flagstaff Mall and also on Milton Avenue, right as I-17 comes into town. Stop on by today and see how your hometown, locally owned cell phone guru can help you save money. And also check them out at JustWirelessAZ.com. That's JustWirelessAZ.com.
You're listening to the Jeff Orbit Show.
All right, welcome back. This is Mark Howitt covering for Jeff Orbitz, who is down on his picking his corn today, I think is what he's doing, actually, down on his farm. he's taking a little break. He works hard at this show, and I am filling in for him today with special guest Adam Shimoni, former council member now on Flagstaff Biking Organization up in Flagstaff, and Joe Hazel, who's also on FBO and also part of the Flagstaff Trail Fairies. Right before the break, we were getting into talking a little bit about trail etiquette, trail users, how the forest should have a place for every type of user, basically. You know, there's people that like to hike and like to have solitude without hearing chainsaws and motorcycles and other noises out in the wilderness areas in particular. You've got equestrians, people riding mules, horses. I don't know what else they ride out there. mountain bikers. I've even seen, you know, you got these new one-wheel skateboards that are off-road now. And and you got the e-bike issue coming up. You've got motorcycles, obviously. People riding ATVs.
You have base jumpers.
And you've got even, what do they call it? Not skydivers, but the people that launch off the top. I'm missing the word.
Is it a base jumper? No.
No.
Not
parasailing. What is the word for... You jump off with the kite.
Paragliders.
Paragliding. Is that right?
Wow.
Yeah. Yep. And I've actually talked to somebody, and he got off the top of Eldon and made it all the way up to Utah.
Yeah. Wow.
Because they hit thermals, and it lifts them up. And
wow.
Crazy. But so there's all types of users out there. And I think every one of them, there may be a few. Arsons don't have a place. You know, people that like start fires don't have a place in the forest. But all types of users have a place out there, basically, and it's how to keep them from conflicting with each other and keeping a nice, healthy forest, not just healthy trees, but healthy animal habitats, healthy elk populations, spotted owl populations, all that, all these different things that have to come together to make a healthy forest that everybody gets to enjoy. And it's a complicated process because I mountain bike, I hike, I can't afford horses. So I would do that if I could. I'd ride motorcycle. But one thing I have noticed is the horse equestrian interface with other users is often difficult for a number of reasons. Because one, the trails are often single track and narrow, and there's not always a place where you can both get off the trail and get around each other easy. But we were talking about how horses can actually hear motorcycle riders coming just from the sound of it, and they're not shocked by it and they're not startled. Whereas mountain bikers are moving along quickly, but not very loudly.
Right.
And that can often startle a hiker, a horse. The people I startle all the time, and I don't mean to, is runners with headphones in. Mm-hmm. And I'll be like, hey, I'm coming. And they don't hear me. Hey, I'm coming. And they get closer. Hey, I'm. And all of a sudden, you're right up behind them. I'm here now. And then they jump out of their skin.
Or some bikers ride with headphones.
I don't do that. I got a strong feeling about that.
I'm partly out in the woods to, you know, be in the woods and hear the birds. And maybe Schultz Creek is running, and that's a magical sound to hear the water. Just to touch on that, I mean, the Forest Service does have a shared use mandate.
Right.
I mean, it's a congressional mandate to provide shared use. So as part of that, most of the trails on the system are multi-use, and so they have to manage for that use. And so when something new, like one of these one-wheeled skateboard things, you know, comes on, they have to do an analysis on the impacts of that, and also the possible user conflicts that may arise from this new activity.
Yep.
And if it's warranted. And some of that right now applies to the e-bike issue. But
so we say e-bike, we're talking about electric bicycles that are, there's three classes of them, but the ones that most people are getting are pedal assist bikes.
That's right.
You have to actually be turning the pedals at least a little bit. And I've tested these out. Some of them you can barely be turning the pedals, and then it goes really fast because it's got an electric motor.
They don't have a throttle or foot pegs.
Yeah, there is one class that does have a throttle.
That's class three.
And those are generally frowned upon by most.
Yeah, they're not legal at Fort Tuthill, which is open to class one and class two e-bikes.
Yep, not legal
on the... And in a lot of...
Urban trail.
State. Right. Yep. The state parks, they're legal. But on Forest Service lands, on non-motorist trails, they're not.
Right.
Another thing that's coming on the scene are electric motorcycles.
Yes.
And in fact, there was a last week, there was a group, well, maybe it was just two, but I think they're called Cerons, or at least maybe that's one brand.
Okay.
But they're out riding the Tuthill Bike Park, which is not open to motorcycles
at all,
electric or gas.
Yeah, there's motorized means it has a motor, and if it says no motors, you know, and that you look at these stickers coming up on the Forest Service signs, it's like, you know, you got the no ATV, the no motorcycle, the no e-bike, and it's just, I feel like that whole sign is going to have a huge amount of stickers on it here as we go forward in the future, and more things are getting electrified.
What is an approved use?
And it does make me think about, you know, the idea of induced demand, and, you know, you build a trail, you build a bike route, you build, you know, infrastructure for alternatives, and that's what you're going to get, right? You look at, you know, we talked about how, you know, we have to accommodate all these different modes, and my mind goes to the roads because I think about the roads and their street infrastructure, right?
And by the way, Adam rode here today.
Of course.
He rides everywhere.
I do.
I drove.
Confession. Sorry.
And, yeah, you know, our roads are not designed for bike and pedestrians like they used to be or originally were, you know, but...
Yeah, before the automobile was big, right?
Right, right. And so today you have all these alternative modes trying to make it work on the roads with cars, upsetting drivers, taking the lane, navigating sketchy situations, but... all this just to say that I read an article recently speaking about the Vancouver bicycle infrastructure and whatnot, and that they're leading the way in many ways, but they're seeing an issue now with too many alternative users on their paths for cyclists. You know, these single-wheeled, you know, skateboards or whatever we're calling them and whatnot, and scooters and all these other things. And so they're trying to figure out how to accommodate all these other users on their paths. That these are individuals who would have maybe driven before, who are now choosing to use an alternative, but now they're clogging up the system and there's creating issues.
Or, I mean, those are really big at the university.
Yep.
And is that appropriate on sidewalks? On sidewalks where you've got...
Yeah. Well, suddenly NAU went from... Class, when I was there, 12,000 students to something like 20, 22,000 now.
30.
And they bring bicycles and skateboards and, you know... Skate shoes and
whatever, right.
All kinds of devices.
And it's great, you know, because it's less cars and people are getting around.
Yeah, right? Without polluting.
Without polluting, without much impact on the roads, without much cost overhead.
Yep. Yeah, it's fantastic. We're going to take a short little break. We'll be back with Joe Hazel and Adam Shimoni.
This is the Jeff Horovitz Show.
You know, it is a beautiful time of year to take just a nice 30-minute drive from Flagstaff West onto I-40 to Williams. And why don't you pop in and say hi to former Mayor John Moore at Miss Kitty Steakhouse in downtown Williams on Route 66. Miss Kitty Steakhouse features a huge variety of steaks. I absolutely love their steaks there. Every time I go out to Williams, I stop by Miss Kitty Steakhouse. I've also got a great selection, great menu of poultry and fish. And they're open from Monday. Oh, they're open every day of the week from Monday through Sunday from 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. Also, don't forget to check out Miss Kitty's Steakhouse breakfast menu. First-class breakfast between 7 a.m. and 10 a.m. all throughout the week as well. For more information, you can go to MissKittySteakhouse.com. That's MissKittySteakhouse.com on those busy Friday and Saturday nights when everybody's going out to see Old Town Williams right there on Route 66. Why don't you call for a reservation at 928-433-5889. That's Miss Kitty Steakhouse in Williams on Route 66.
You're listening to the Jeff Horovitz Show.
Welcome back to the Jeff Horvitz Show. This is Mark Howitt filling in for Jeff Horvitz. I've got Adam Shimoni. I almost said Adam Hazel and Joe Shimoni, but Joe Hazel and Adam Shimoni in the studio with me. We're talking about all things not car, bicycle. And we're drifting to skateboard, motorcycle, all kinds of things, trail use and urban use. And Adam was on the city council for a long time. You're very passionate about biking. He bikes everywhere. Do you even own a car?
I do. And I'm not anti-car. You know, a lot of people think that I would be, but, you know, a car has its place and it's a great tool. And I do drive. I really enjoy cycling. It definitely adds to my quality of life. It adds to my health benefits. You know, just riding here just, you know, really woke me up, right? I don't drink coffee. So that was kind of like my coffee was riding over here this morning. But I just love life on a bike. And I think that those of us who bike a lot understand what I'm talking about, and just the feeling of being free and the wind, you know, going through your hair or what's left of your hair,
and not searching for a parking spot when you go downtown.
Yeah, VIP, going right to your destination.
Yep.
And we were talking earlier about trail etiquette and trying to communicate on the trail. On you know, when you're passing someone, I've got a nice little horn on my bike.
Nice.
That you like squeeze. You know? And so I was doing that all the way here when I was passing people, and people were all smiling and giving me thumbs up, and you know,
I like it.
It was fun, and like at times I'll strap a big boom box to my bike, and you know, it's just a party. When you're on a bike, you're having fun.
It is. One thing I noticed is, you know, I own a truck, I have a construction business, and then I have a Jeep that I use just to get around. But if you are in the habit of always jumping in your vehicle, you'll do it even when you don't need to. Mm. And so I was going over to a local pizza shop a mile from my house, and my first inclination was grab my Jeep keys. Mm. I'm like, wait a second. I don't have to carry anything. I'm not bringing the kids. It's just me. Why am I not just getting on my bike?
Wow.
So I dropped the keys, got my bike off the shelf, and
that's great.
Check the tires.
Yeah.
And took off, and it was refreshing. And I didn't actually, I mean, the way you go, a lot of times you could avoid traffic lights and stuff by using urban trails and alternative routes. And I live, 3.5 miles from downtown. And I've actually raced my wife before. I get on my bike. She gets in the car.
Yeah.
By the time she's parked, I'm there.
You're already there. You're waiting for her.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, it's funny, on the way here, given the location of where I was coming from and where this destination is, I was thinking, do I take Butler or do I take 66?
Yeah.
And a part of me wanted to take Butler because that's more my route, especially if I drive, I'm definitely taking Butler.
Right.
But, you know, given the recent removal of the barriers on Butler, and I know I'm kind of jumping ahead a bit.
Yeah, let's get to that in a minute, but go ahead.
Yeah. I chose to take the urban trail on 66, and it was a lovely ride, minus all the different potholes and cracks in that
It needs some repairs.
Yeah. Then it was built in 1988, I believe, and it hasn't been repaved since. And so, you know, just shows you how long we use our bike infrastructure and the low impact of bikes on the infrastructure.
Right. If that was a road, you would have repaved it multiple times by now.
Exactly. Yeah. Costing us millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah. I'm surprised. When I was growing up, this was in the early 80s, I guess it was, a mile of road was $1 million. Mm. Now a mile of urban trail is $1 million. And I can't imagine what a road must be, $10 million or something. I don't know. It's, we're looking at the new loan tree overpass coming in. It was slated for close to $80 million. It's probably going to be $160 million with inflation.
Gosh, you think so? I've heard like $120 or so.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised how high it goes. I mean, we saw that with the 4th Street Bridge. I think it went about 50% over budget.
And a big debate, oh my gosh, I know. And the big debate with the Lone Tree was, you know, like I kept bringing up is like, you know, they wanted to build 8-lane intersections, which was just like huge. The biggest intersections we'd have in Flag, 2nd to 4th and 66, which is 7.
Okay.
And definitely not pedestrian friendly, definitely not kid friendly, you know, bicycle friendly, et cetera. And I kept arguing that this project is going to be overpriced as it is. If we remove lanes, will we not save money by, you know, making the bridge thinner?
Yeah, there's probably some construction costs. I would counter with that, though, and be the devil's advocate, so-called, in here, and say, once you build it and then you realize you need to make it bigger later, then it gets a lot more expensive to do that, right?
Right.
So you have to really plan ahead and say, let's future-proof this for every aspect of travel, car, truck, bike, walk. Skateboard, who knows what.
And the beautiful thing is, like, if you look at communities who are doing, you know, who are ahead of us in the culture and the values that we have here.
We're not leading. We're not ahead of the curve.
we're about 50 years behind, I think, towns like Eugene and Boulder and Vancouver and Ottawa and all these other towns that are, you know, much more bike-ped friendly. We're so behind, and but yeah, we're also leading in ways. You know, we have the first protected intersection planned for the city of Flagstaff in the state of Arizona, for example. But when you look
and
at
that, would be Lone Tree,
and okay. 66, or sorry, Lone Tree and Butler.
I want to get back to that. We're going to take a short break, and we'll come back here in a few minutes. You're listening to the Jeff Horvitz Show.
Listening to the Jeff Horvitz Show.
Call Diamond Auto Glass first before making an auto glass claim. Now, here's why. Most insurance companies, they use a nationwide glass shop to answer their calls, and they're going to try to route you to their shop, which may very well delay the time it takes to replace your glass. Now, when you get a rock chip in your windshield, stop on by Diamond Auto Glass as soon as possible. Repairing a chip will stop it from spreading, and it'll save you from a costly windshield replacement. If you've replaced your windshield with Diamond Auto Glass before, as I have, you have a lifetime chip repair warranty and no appointments necessary. Just stop on in. Most chip repairs take 10 to 15 minutes. Remember, always call Diamond Auto Glass first. 928-779-4140. That's 928-779-4140, or go to thedifferenceisclear.com. If you're thinking about buying a home, don't waste your time being misled by teaser interest rates on the internet. The first thing you should do is call Kim Dawson at Nova Home Loans. As Arizona's largest privately owned mortgage lender, Nova Home Loans offers local decision making like a bank with better access to more programs like a broker. That saves you time, effort, and money. Kim's going to show you how much cash you really need and what price range you actually qualify for. With Kim's pre-approval letter in hand, sellers know you're serious. It's almost like having cash in hand. For purchase or refinance, call Kim Dawson at 928-310-6458. That's 928-310-6458. And by the way, if you mention the Jeff Horvitz Show, you can get $250 off the lender's fee at closing. Call Kim Dawson at 928-310-6458 or go to novahomeloans.com/Kim Dawson. Kim Dawson, NMLS 697411, Nova Home Loans, NMLS 3087, BK number 090242, Equal Housing Opportunity, subject to credit approval. Terms and conditions may apply.
All right, we got a good hour coming up. We'll be back again next hour with Adam Shimoni and Joe Hazel from the Flagstaff Biking Organization. And we'll talk about bicycle infrastructure, pedestrian infrastructure, Lone Tree overpass, all kinds of traffic issues, and alternative transportation. Stay tuned. We'll be back shortly.
You're listening to the Jeff Horvitz Show.
Welcome back to the second hour of the Jeff Horvitz Show. I'm Mark Howitt, sitting in for Jeff, who is down in Camp Verde today. I'm here with Joe Hazel and Adam Shimoni from Flagstaff Biking Organization. Adam is a former vice mayor, former council member, knows a lot about city in and outs. Joe also works with the Trail Fairies. We talked about that a little bit last hour. Trail Fairies is, I love you guys. You're out there building trail, and I get to ride it. It's a fantastic, you work, I enjoy.
Well, great, I'm glad you're liking the work.
I just wrote a new, you guys just finished up in conjunction with the Forest Service, a new trail called Pluto. I believe the Trail Fairies were involved with that. Or
you... Actually, no. There's a number of ways volunteerism is working with the Flagstaff Ranger District. Thursday events are a Forest Service held event at 3 o'clock every Thursday. Lately, and meeting at the Schultz Y, but those events have been largely focused on the Schultz Y stack system. That's part of that metal.
Okay.
Plan that we mentioned earlier.
So Pluto is part of that.
Yeah, Pluto's part of that. And one more trail to build, which might get knocked out today. And that'll wrap up that area. On Saturdays, we hold the Flagstaff biking organization volunteer events.
Okay.
Those are largely focused up at the Sunset Trailhead, working on the new Climb 3 trail. Probably get a different name, but... And then Sunday, the trail fairies work. Now, some of the trail fairy guys will work on some of these other volunteer events. But
yeah, I saw you out there working on Pluto, I think, right? You were out there on that trail? Or I saw you at least with your helmet in the area because you go out.
Going up on Sunday to work on Jedi.
Oh, were you? Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
That's right. And because the road's closed, we ride our bikes to it.
Yep. So that we'll talk about more about trail days here at the end of the show, but... if you want to find out about the ones put on by FBO, you go to the Flagstaff Biking Organization.
.org
website. If you want to find out about the Thursday Forest Service Volunteer Days, is there a way to do that? They have a on their website. Is it up or is it a mailing list? Or
the Forest Service isn't really good at social media.
I've noticed that.
on the socials. You can find their volunteer event on the Flagstaff Trails Initiative website.
Oh, I forgot about that website. Yep, yep. Flagstaff Trails Initiative. Yep,
which is a coalition of all users.
Okay.
The bike shops get the word out. FBO shares their trail day information.
And, okay.
FBO's, of course, is on our website and then on our Instagram or on Facebook page.
Yeah, I follow the Trail Fairies on Facebook, FBO, and I actually support FBO. I think it's a fantastic work you guys are doing. And really, I was in recent contact. There's Prescott has the Prescott, I think it's Mountain Biking Association or something. Mm-hmm. And that they do a great work. They've got a trail day coming up
doing
as well.
Big things.
But you guys have such a, I want to say, bigger organization.
Mm.
You do a lot more than just mountain bike trails. You do urban stuff, you work with city council to get stuff done, you work with the Forest Service. I know it's a nightmare to get trails in. Like, you get a trail idea, I call it a nightmare, but a long time, a very long process.
Yeah.
The word NEPA comes up a lot. I'm not even sure what that stands for. I know it's something environmental that you have to go through to get a trail.
Do you want that one out?
No.
NEPA stands for National Environmental Policy Act.
Okay.
So anything on federally managed land has to abide by that act, and there's a couple of different levels, the highest of which is an environmental impact statement. Middle ground is environmental assessment, and that's what was used for the analysis of the Dry Lake Hills Eldon project.
Okay.
The last one would be a categorical exclusion, where they may use existing studies.
Okay.
It's the lowest form of NEPA and the easiest to get things approved.
Sure.
But yeah, it's a process. And it's good. It's a good thing. I mean,
yeah, the goal is good. It's a lot of red tape to get through, but the intention is good.
Well, and lately, like, part of the problem is, you need specialists that need to have the skills to do these studies: archaeologists, biologists, bird people. ornithologists, all the ologists.
Yeah,
and,
every type of ologist.
And so they're all busy, right? Like, say we want to get a trail project in and approved. Well, those specialists may be working on a fire and fuels project.
Which is high priority,
FWPP.
Right? Yeah, because if your forest burns down, then everything else doesn't work so well. All your trail building, all that. And we've had a number of horrific fires, the museum fire, the pipeline fire.
Yeah.
And just kind of an update, as I understand it, Schultz is still closed because they're still repairing the road.
That's correct. And Eldon Lookout Road.
And Eldon Lookout Road.
Still closed to the public. Well, just motorized use.
Right. You can still take your mountain bike up, your horse, your legs.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Something that a lot of folks don't seem to realize, that Waterline Road is also closed, and Weatherford Trail in the wilderness.
Closed to all users?
Closed to all uses.
Okay. Because the Water Pipeline Road got wiped out in 2010, I think it was, with the fire.
Yeah, that's right. And then it got repaired.
And then wiped out again?
Wiped out again.
Yeah,
even,
so that...
maybe even more so.
That was the Schultz Fire. Is that right? Is that what it was called?
Yeah, the 2010 Schultz Fire.
Enormous fire. I was actually... me and Adam both spent a lot of time in Israel, and I was actually just coming back from Israel, and my friends over there were saying, Flagstaff's on fire, you know.
Oh my gosh.
International news.
Wow.
And I was like, yeah, it is. Wow.
Burned 20,000 acres.
And
wow.
On the east side of the peaks, and that burn was so hard that it there's nothing retaining the soil anymore.
That's right. It becomes hydrophobic.
Comes right off. And it actually crossed the 89 and went over to the east side of 89 with mud flows, and what a disaster that was.
Right.
And they're still working on mitigating those issues over there. And then we had the pipeline fire, and you know, a lot of years of mismanagement of the forest, and it's kind of cost, and it's costing millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars to catch up to where we need to be with forest thinning.
Right.
You know, we think logging used to be a big thing in northern Arizona. It stopped, and now we actually have to pay people to come in and log, as I understand it, because we don't want clear cutting. We don't want them to go in and cut everything down, which is efficient for logging, but not good for anything else. So,
well, there's not much money in it when they can't take the big trees.
Yeah. Yep.
So it is difficult to contract folks to do the work.
Yeah, and it affects all kinds of things. It's
there's
property.
Not a market for the wood. I mean, and folks don't realize there's the only reason Flagstaff was a logging town was because we were building a railroad.
Right.
And so all those big ponderosa pines went to railroad ties.
Mm-hmm.
As I understand it, the big white firs, those went to ammunition boxes in World War II, which is why there's not a lot of old growth white fir.
Interesting. I've seen a lot of those as a contractor. They made houses out of these things at one point. You'd find houses with ammo boxes for walls and roofs and
wow, and
railroad ties. I even worked on a railroad tie house where they just stacked up the railroad ties and plastered it and stuccoed it.
But I mean, as far as lumber grade hardwoods, I mean, there's not a lot here.
Right.
So it's about like biomass.
Right.
But that means shipping the wood product all the way to Sholo, which I think is the closest biomass plant. I think there's some stuff going up in Williams.
I know that they're talking about stuff here in the region as well, but I'm not too sure this
Williams.
Any progress.
I mean, there's a new mill that is operational now, I think, that's helping with they call it Four Fry, the Four Forests and Restoration Initiative.
Yep.
Which
and
is
the city kicks in money for that, right? Am I correct? Or is that
for Four Fry?
No. It's what's the one we kick in money for? For the watershed.
That was FWPP.
FWPP. Too many acronyms.
Flagstaff Watershed Protection Act, which was a city bond.
Right. So $10 million.
We paid for it.
Was many years ago.
Yeah.
And that also pushed back the Mount Eldon Dry Lake Hills Trail plan by probably a decade.
Right, because they were thinning and trying to restore the forest to a healthy condition. And unfortunately, we had the, I think it was the museum fire that caught fire while they still had the logs up there.
Right.
And just burnt the forest. So,
which they claimed didn't burn as high of a heat rate because of the thinning that had been done.
So maybe it did help.
That was the museum fire, right. 2,000 acres, and I believe about 50% was low-intensity burn.
Okay.
So actually beneficial to the forest.
Some of that's good, but some of it wasn't because we obviously have water shedding off.
Of course.
A lot of it wasn't, and now you've got flooding down Paradise and Spruce Wash.
I remember I surveyed the area with permission from the Forest Service, and they had apparently dumped wood chips or something through the forest up there, I think, hopes of holding the soil.
Yeah, they were helicopter mulching.
Yeah, helicopter mulching, exactly. And those wood chips that were up on the Dry Lake Hills ended up on Route 66.
Oh, my gosh.
I saw them all the way down there by, Sportsman's Warehouse, and I was like, wow, this has floated a long ways to get to this point. But one of the things I have noticed when I'm out in the woods is the old logging rail lines, the temporary rail lines.
You can find those.
The rail beds are still out there.
You know what to look for.
You'll see a raised hump with a flat top on it.
That's linear.
Yeah, linear, straight-lined, and I still find them out there.
Especially over on the northwest side of the peaks.
See them over there, too. I've seen some over by Fort Tuthill. Even coming from Mountain Dell, there's an old rail bed that goes towards Sinclair Wash and up towards the university. But it's interesting to find, and I wonder in my head, like, rails to trails, and will someday the train be moved out of Flagstaff?
Oh, gosh.
We've talked about this when I first moved here. Like, they said back then you could move the train to the I-40 corridor for $200 million. This was back in the 90s, and I'm sure that it'd be more like $200 billion at this point.
but very difficult to work with BNSF.
Yeah, they have bigger lawyers, more money than our small town for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I remember as a councilmember always hearing that there's God and then there's BNSF.
You know? Yeah, well, it goes back to the federal government granted the railroad lots of land through the West in order to get them to put in the railroad.
Right.
And I think it was every other parcel alternating on each side of the railroad tracks was given to the railroad.
Mm-hmm.
So they had a huge amount of land. Some of it they sold off, but they've kept the tracks. And
but it is pretty interesting because it's mainly used for commerce. The railroads in the West, it's not anything.
It's not like Amtrak in the East or Europe,
right. Or anything close to Europe. Where I mean, it's mass transit,
right? Yeah, we don't have. When I go to New York, Boston, there's a little bit of mass transit, but yeah, out anything west of New York City,
well,
Seattle.
Yeah,
Flagstaff's a little bit isolated, and we don't have a lot of direct airline flights. And with, global warming and climate issues, airline travel is not one of the best for emissions. And a bullet train to say you got to go to L.A. for work instead of jumping on that hopper plane. It's burning X amount. I don't know.
Plane is obviously a high polluter because you're flying through there versus something just rolling on the ground.
But if you could be on a bullet train 200 miles an hour like they have in Japan or France, you could be in L.A. in 2 hours.
I would be so excited if I could jump on the train and zip over to the beach and enjoy a day and come back.
And or Salt Lake City.
And this makes me think about just all the arguments we'll have on social media with FBO's page, Flagstaff Biking Organization's posts about, bike lanes and bike infrastructure and all the complaints about, well, they aren't paying their fair share, and it just makes me think about the argument about public transit and public infrastructure in general and just how we are subsidizing everything for the car.
We are.
Everything. It's not your driver's license, registration fees, or whatever it is that you're paying for your vehicle that come even close to touching the actual cost. It's really subsidized by the government and all of us taxpayers. And so we just have to decide, do we want our government to be investing in 8, 10, 12 lane corridors for cars, or do we want to be investing in public transit that move more people more efficiently, faster and easier?
Yeah, we were talking, I think it was on the break, about the kind of the 1%, 7%,
right.
92% rule, where there's 1% of us, and I know me and Adam and a few other guys in town fit into this rule, that we'll ride our bikes even if there's no such thing as a bike lane. We'll be out there.
We'll take the lane.
We'll take the lane. It's a very uncomfortable thing for most riders to do, and dangerous to some degree, because the only thing protecting you is maybe your helmet and your gloves.
Right.
Versus a five, my truck is 8,000 pounds, my diesel truck.
Exactly.
And
you'll never see a grandmother.
No.
You'll never see a child. You'll never see an individual who maybe isn't as fast or comfortable on a bike.
And then
you'll never see Joe.
There's another 7% that
I'm afraid to ride my bike on the road. That's why I ride my mountain bike.
Vast majority of people feel that way.
And there's another 7% that if you have a painted bike lane, they're comfortable enough with that. But the 92% that are left aren't comfortable with a painted line.
They need separation.
They want a separate lane.
The two components I've learned about are they need holistic separated bikeways, which is just a bike network that's separated and not broken up with a bunch of on and off ramps for cars going into businesses or whatever it is.
Yeah, driveways.
Intersections, driveways.
Yep.
And then they need maintenance. They need priority maintenance, not days after, months after. I mean, half of the Flagstaff is still covered in cinders.
Oh, I know. That's
not the car lanes, but the bike lanes,
because they drift towards the gutters
and
of the road.
And the city doesn't clean them.
Yep. Yeah, it's a big issue. I called the city about cleaning cinders, and they said, and it's true, for every truck of cinders that's dumped, it takes 10 street cleaners full to clean that one truck up.
And it breaks my heart, because when I was on council, on the one hand, you don't want to use these chemicals through the salt that,
Yeah, we did that for a year or two, and it caused millions and millions of dollars worth of damage to the road.
Right, and to your cars, and to your
bicycles. Killed a lot of trees, too.
Trees,
everything.
Huge negative impact, but the alternative are these cinders.
Yep.
So what do you do? And it's not an easy answer.
I was thinking about that recently. It'd be great if the city would invest in more street cleaning infrastructure.
Yep.
Because the bikes do ride on that 3 to 4 feet next to the curb where all the cinders collect.
Right.
And it's It doesn't feel good to be on cinders.
It's sketchy.
Yeah.
It's very sketchy. I was going down Beaver after, I think, our last snow, like, you know, weeks after. And it was just like an inch of cinders. And I was like going pretty fast, but I was also like, you know, pumping the brakes and keeping myself at a reasonable speed. But I was thinking to myself, if I slip on my cross cycle, which has like a hybrid kind of tire, these cars, I'm going to die.
Yeah. You know? If you don't slide into traffic, right, you're going to get worse than road rash because you're going to get road rash with cinder built into it.
Right. With a car running you over.
Yeah.
With that 6 feet off the ground because everyone's got their big trucks now and they can't see in front of them.
So the city has what's called an active transportation master plan.
Yep.
And I was a big part of that. We've got basically one guy at the city, Martin Ince, that does an enormous amount of work planning.
Oh my gosh.
Help is on the way.
Help is on the way. Amazing.
Two employees are going to be hired this next year to work with them.
Oh, great.
And I think there's even a third in discussion that's going to be pulled into it.
So the active transportation master plan basically deals mostly with alternative transportation.
Correct.
Bikes.
Or active transportation.
Yeah, yeah. Act as an active human.
Yes. Not your pedal. Yeah,
yeah, not pushing your pedal. If you even do that anymore,
right,
you can just get into your Tesla and say, go to wherever. But it's an important plan. And basically, Martin taught us that if you have a plan, money will flow there. If you have no plan, nobody's going to give you money to get
and
it
that's
done.
That's partially true because the city's had plans dating back to the 1979, 1980. And so over the decades, you know, when I took a deep dive and looked at all the old city plans over the decades, it's like, oh, these are great plans. A lot of work was put into them, a lot of public engagement, council discussion. There's articles that discuss it, you know, from the Daily Sun back then. You can find all these great archives. But then when you look at what actually came from it, often it was little to nothing.
Right.
And it's so frustrating to think, why hasn't the city taken these plans and run with them?
Let's take that thought, and we'll be back right after this break, and we'll talk more about city plans for alternative transportation.
This is the Jeff Horovitz Show.
Sportsman's Bar and Grill has been voted the best sports bar in Flagstaff 13 years in a row. They've got 17 TVs for all your sports action. Plus, all day, every day, you can always get something good to eat off their $4 menu. And don't forget, Sportsman's Bar and Grill has happy hour going on all the time. $3 Mexican canned beers and hard seltzers, $4 daily craft beer specials, and $4 pint specials. And don't forget about their daily specials. I go there a lot for these great specials, including Taco Tuesday. They have awesome tacos at Sportsman's Bar and Grill. Wing Wednesday, half-price wings. You know, these wings are like gold nowadays, so take advantage of Wing Wednesday. Get half-price wings. And Thursday night at Sportsman's Bar and Grill, you get $3 sliders. Sportsman's Bar and Grill up by the hospital, just north of downtown Flagstaff in the Bash's Shopping Center. Waiting until a recession becomes official would be very late to make any constructive changes to your portfolio. Jeff Horovitz here, and Glenn Least and his team at WT Wealth Management know that predictions about what the markets might do are often wrong. That's why it's better to prepare than to predict. Glenn can help you strategically position your portfolio based on where you are in your financial life. Making emotional decisions is not a good strategy. It leads to selling at the wrong time and waiting too long to get back in when turnarounds happen. Glenn and his team help you build a portfolio that fits you like a glove with an investment strategy that targets capturing upside potential while mitigating risk during difficult markets. Glenn's a fiduciary who shares your values. Call Glenn Least for a complimentary portfolio review at 928-225-2474. Glenn and his team have an investment strategy to give you confidence no matter what curveball the market might throw. Call Glenn Least at 928-225-2474.
You're listening to the Jeff Horovitz Show.
Hey, I'm back. This is Mark Howitt with Adam Schimone and Joe Hazel. Adam, right before the break, we were talking about Active Transportation Master Plan, which is a plan for bike lanes, sidewalks, all that stuff that isn't a car, basically.
Right. That benefits the car. I want to be very clear with our listeners. You know, when we build for alternative modes of transportation, whether it's walking or biking or e-scooters or whatever it might be, those are cars off the road, which then allows congestion to be less, right? Allows you to be able to drive from A to B more efficiently.
Yeah, so Adam, I know, rides his bike everywhere.
You're welcome, Flagstaff.
Thank you. Thank you, because that's one less person in traffic ahead of me.
Exactly.
Right? And so that is a good point. If you get more people into alternative, you know, on your one-wheel skateboard, on your whatever.
On their feet.
There's so many e-things coming out, it's hard to keep track of.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you got the bus. I'm personally not a big fan of the bus. I'd rather see people active transportation, because I don't consider the bus active.
True, but yeah, everyone is a pedestrian when they get on and off the bus or in and out of their car. So, you know, I don't judge personally. You know, obviously, you teach their own. Whatever they can do, as long as, ideally, they're getting out of their car.
Getting out of the car. You've posted before, and I've seen this elsewhere on the social media, where you take a picture of a road with all the cars stopped, and then you take the cars out but leave the people there. And there's like, the people are spread out about 40 feet apart.
Right.
And there's almost nobody there.
Right.
So if it was just the drivers standing on the road, you're like, wow, this is empty.
Really horrible use of space.
Right. And I feel that way when I'm driving around in my car with just me. I'm like, I'm using a lot of energy to get me from A to B.
And there's ways to design our roads that accommodate all of us and support all modes. You know, like if you're driving, if you're walking, and if you're biking, it's settled small things like lane widths. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of our lanes in Flagstaff are 12 feet wide. What else is 12 feet wide? The I-17.
Right. 12 feet is the maximum width of a lane usually.
Right.
Highway lane.
And often you'll find, you know, 12 feet wide plus a gutter. So you got 13 and a half or, you know, whatever it is. So the city in Arizona culture in general and engineers in general are taught and trained to overbuild for the car. Mm-hmm. And what that does is it creates a car-only centric environment where no one else feels accommodated. And often, you know, when you have those types of environments, it's not a vibrant environment. It's not a place that people want to be. Mm-hmm. It's just a single use for cars to get from A to B. And it's a design, you know, we often design to get people from A to B as quickly as we can so that they can spend less time in their cars, right?
Right.
So it's just so backwards, and it costs so much money to do it.
So a couple of my favorite things around town when I do bike is the Route 66 route, which you don't run into that many intersections. You can go a long ways without hitting an intersection on the Route 66 bike path, whatever you call it, urban trail.
Right.
Same thing on NEU has a cycle track that goes between the university and the cemeteries.
Mm-hmm.
And you're actually on a raised cycle track separated from the cars. I think everybody would feel comfortable in those. I'd feel comfortable taking my 4-year-old daughter on her bike on those.
Except for, like you said, the intersections.
The intersections.
Right? Because of the intersections, one, you have to beg to cross. It doesn't just turn green for you. The intersections are usually very large.
Yep.
There's usually right-hand turn lanes of cars just kind of weaving in front of you, turning right, which is where a lot of the crashes occur with cars and bikes.
Yep, the right hook.
The right hook.
Right hook.
You know, and we should at some point talk about protected intersections because that is the solution.
Yeah, so there is protected intersections coming. Now, I thought there was going to be one, and you, correct me, I thought there was going to be one at Butler and Beaver.
Yes.
And I don't see I know how they work. And it's a little hard to explain on the radio, but I didn't see room there at Butler and Beaver for one.
I'll give a very brief synopsis of what a protected intersection is for the listeners who don't know, because most people don't. Bumped out curbs at the four corners so that the car has to make a sharper right-hand turn. It's not like this 45-degree smooth right hand. You have to make a little bit of a sharper turn, which what does that do? Slows you down.
Slows you down and also turns so you're looking at anybody crossing the road.
And then the car is stacked back. There's no right turn on red. So the car is stopped a little ways back from the intersection, and the pedestrian and the cyclist are up front.
So you see who's there.
You see them at the corner. And then guess who gets the green light first without having to beg to cross?
Right. So
the pedestrian. Leads pedestrian signalized intervals. So they get the green light for about 3 to 5 seconds ahead of time of the car.
Yep.
So often they're able to clear the space before the car even gets a green light and cross that distance, which is usually thinner.
Right.
You know,
makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense, and it's also called a...
We're trying to retrofit these into an existing... Yes.
Very easy to do.
...town.
Very easy to do. This is actually a very low-hanging fruit way solution to intersection, you know, dangers. Because it's small differences. Like we said, the bumped-out curb and the new intersection signal.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, you know, the timing is a little bit different.
Well, the thing that always gets me is I'm at... And, you know, we got listeners in other parts of town, but you'll have an intersection that's really busy, and you're going to make a right on red. So you're always looking left.
Right.
But you're not looking at the pedestrian on the curb on the right.
No.
And I've almost made this mistake of forgetting to double check for that pedestrian who's walked up since I got there and I've been looking left.
I guarantee 100% of all motorists have made that mistake at one time or
exactly.
the other. I know I have.
Cars aren't looking for pedestrians and cyclists. They're looking for other cars.
And the cyclist is the one that really surprises me. I love cycling, but they come up a lot quicker to that corner than a pedestrian strolling up to the corner. Mm-hmm. You have a better chance of seeing them as you quickly glance right and back to watching cars that's coming so you can jump out in traffic.
Right, but they may not be visible, and they're kind of in your blind spot.
You're in your blind spot, and they come up
they're
fast.
Coming up.
Yep.
I had a quick question, Adam. About that
protected intersection? Or?
Yeah, protected intersection. What about the guy who runs the red light? Now it's just cyclists going out into that intersection at that interval.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones exposed.
Right. So I think if someone's going to run a red light, they're going to run a red light, and there's not much you can do to stop that and really, I think, create protection from that other than maybe a roundabout, you know, and we can discuss roundabouts. But basically, I think...
Which actually work pretty good.
They do if they're single lane. So there are two lanes, which is what the city loves to build around Flagstaff and desires to build. Well, they're problematic.
And in Sedona.
Right. It's a big cluster.
People can't seem to figure them out.
No, it's confusing.
Okay. They do okay in Europe.
It's kind of a side on that. I was here. I live close to Fort Tuthill, and we've got double roundabouts there. And some guy.
A nice single one right there, too, right?
Yeah, but I mean, there's two roundabouts. Two single lane roundabouts. And I saw some guy, and he forgot to get out of the roundabout at the right time. So instead of going around, he stopped, put it in reverse, and backed up in the roundabout. I'm like, oh my goodness. Well, you just go around again.
So as a pedestrian, as a pedestrian, you know, at a roundabout, like you need to navigate that, and you need to, you know, fight for the right of way because cars are just free flowing, right?
Yep.
And so I went to that Fort Tuthill roundabout, and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna take my bike on the pedestrian route rather than taking the lane, which is what I feel comfortable doing. But I went off and I went the route that a pedestrian would have to take or someone less comfortable would take. And literally as a grown man, you know, and a man of privilege and, you know, with my bicycle, cars were not and trucks were not stopping.
No, they don't understand how to stop for pedestrians. We're going to have to take a short break. We're going to be right back to continue this conversation about roundabouts, bikes, pedestrians, and alternative traffic in Flagstaff and everywhere, really. Applies to everywhere. Be back in a few.
This is the Jeff Horovitz Show.
This is Jeff Horovitz, and if you listen to my show, you know that I recently had the blinds replaced in my house. And when we decided to get this done, obviously we called my friends at the Blind Brothers, and we weren't going to deal with anybody else because this is a great Northern Arizona company. They don't use subcontractors, so you know who you're dealing with. Now, the Blind Brothers came in. They laid out all the options for us. We picked out, my wife Angela and I, a great set of blinds. They gave us a great price. We opted to have them do the installation, which they can do for up to half off the price, as well as any other advertised specials. It's a great deal. They came in, they took out all the old blinds, got rid of them, hung the new blinds. They work perfect. We are very, very happy. I want you to do your neighbors a favor. Call the Blind Brothers for a free estimate at 928-634-2423. I know you're going to be happy. That's 928-634-2423. Or go online. They have great monthly specials at theblindbrothers.com. This segment of the show is brought to you exclusively by Kelly Broaddus with Broaddus Properties Group, brokered by EXP. You know, the person that I call when I want to get you a real estate market update, that's Kelly Broaddus. There's a reason for that. She's got the experience in Northern Arizona to get your home sold for top dollar, and she's been doing this for a long time. Also, if you're thinking about buying a home, Kelly Broaddus can help you out. Give her a call right now, and I'm sure you're going to be happy with the great service and all of the dedicated professionals that Kelly works with. 888-446-5602. By the way, get the value of your home. Go to NorthernArizonaFineHomes.com. That's NorthernArizonaFineHomes.com. You click on that home valuation tab, and you'll get that right away. And I want you to look up Kelly Broaddus. You'll see her many great five-star reviews. Broaddus. Look that up. Google that. And don't forget to catch the business spotlight that I just did last week with Kelly Broaddus. Look up the Jeff Horovitz Show on YouTube and check that out. She has some really great information there about what's going on in the real estate market. Again, check her out at NorthernArizonaFineHomes.com.
You're listening to the Jeff Horovitz Show.
All right, this is Mark Howitt. We're back on the Jeff Horvitz Show with Adam Shimoni and Joe Hazel, Flagstaff Biking Organization. And we were just talking about roundabouts. And I'm a big roundabout fan because from a pollution and a traffic standpoint, you're not sitting there at a red light when nobody's
makes a lot of sense
at the opposite sides, right?
Well, it keeps moving.
It keeps moving. You know, I pull up and like I don't have to wait at a red light when nobody else is out there.
And it reduces conflict points.
Yes.
You know, so it is technically safer for the car. Mm-hmm. And it's significantly safer for the car.
What about for the pedestrian, the bicyclist, the kid trying to get to school on the other side of the roundabout?
Huge headache, huge mess. You know, it's going to discourage people from walking and biking. And the city's got numerous roundabouts, two-lane, one-and-a-half-lane roundabouts planned in very student-focused areas, whether it's at University in Beulah, the new alignment of University in Beulah, where we're going to have a big old two-lane roundabout, which is going to be a big old mess.
Oh, is there really going to be a – oh, at University in Beulah, yes.
Right, I remember. Yep. Right.
Yep.
And then there's going to be a, I believe it's called a turbo roundabout, but it's basically 1.5 lanes where there's random right slip turn lanes or right turn lanes built into the roundabout at Lockett and 4th Street. And the city is currently exploring a two-lane roundabout at 4th and Butler, but they're also exploring a protected intersection there as well.
Interesting.
So I'm really
hoping, is there a way to do roundabouts that are safe for non-vehicles?
Yes, there is, and the Dutch are leading in this, of course, and they're still working on it. It's not perfect. The Dutch roundabout is one of which the cyclist and the pedestrian almost leave the roundabout area. They kind of go to the outskirts, like when you're approaching the roundabout, the route for the bike and the pedestrians kind of lead out to the side, and then they have the right of way, so they actually are able to kind of just keep going, and then the roundabout occurs for the vehicles, but then the vehicle, by the time they reach where the pedestrian and the cyclist are, they can see them, they're very visible, and the cyclist and the pedestrian are able to kind of free flow as well. So it's kind of a win-win for all.
So in other words, the vehicle has already exited the roundabout, now is facing straight, yes, down the road, and the pedestrian and the cyclist will be perpendicular in front of them where they have a, right, good view of them.
And a big part of that, going back to your comment, Joe, a while ago about red light runners and safety, is, you know, by these little implementations of creating a better, safer network for bike and ped, you increase awareness, you increase culture around it. You know, I feel like right now in Flagstaff, you have this, like, real edgy driving culture where people are trying to catch the light. They're frustrated to be in traffic. They're running red lights. They're making turns that are kind of sketch.
Yep.
And it's not a good environment for anyone, you know, especially a vulnerable user.
Yeah, I've been caught in that Butler, well, not Butler, the Milton Shuffle at 66, where you traffic's moving fast in the left lane, so you're in the left lane, and then you're like, but I need to be on 66. So all of a sudden, you're, right, merging over two lanes suddenly into the turn lane and making a right turn all at once.
Right.
And it's a dangerous habit. I think if you've lived here and you drive a car, you've probably done this at some point, out of frustration from the traffic.
I think a lot of drivers are frustrated at long-term residents because, well, I mean, what, we've doubled in size in 3 decades?
The city's gotten bigger, and the university's gotten a lot bigger.
And we don't have
tourism.
The infrastructure can't handle it. So a commute that might have taken 10 minutes now takes 12,
right,
or 15.
I used to laugh about this when I moved here. I'm like, people would complain about the traffic. I'm like, I came from a city of 4 million people.
Right. Yeah, right. You haven't been on the Beltway where I'm Washington, D.C.
Right.
So I ride on Milton, and I know that a lot, you know, being in that 1% category of being fearless and enthused,
yep,
as a cyclist, and I ride on Milton, and yes, it's sketchy, but like I'm talking when it's gridlock and no one's moving, but yeah, it's still sketchy because doors or people throwing their hands out or yelling at me as I'm passing them for whatever reason just to get a laugh out of us, you know, that type of a engagement.
Yeah, but, so that brings me to an interesting question. This last year, a law went into effect allowing motorcycles to lane split, mm-hmm, when traffic is stopped. So they can, and it's considered safer because the motorcycle can work its way up through the traffic, get past that, and then take off at the light safely. I've thought, I want to hear you guys chime in on this as far as what you think, but I feel like that would be safer for bicyclists too, because especially when there's two left turn lanes turning, but I hate being way back behind the cars. Because the first 4 or 5 cars that are ahead of me will take off fast, they're gone, and now I'm this guy trying to pedal, and there's the car behind me wants to be doing 40.
Have you seen those green boxes that other towns have that we don't, of course, but like where at the front of the light, at the signal, there's this huge green box for cyclists to kind of stack up.
And you work your way through traffic while the light's red and get up there, right?
Exactly. And I think they usually have good infrastructure that you're able to stay in the bike lane and get to the front of the traffic very easily, safely to the margin of the road. But then once you get to the front, you have the whole front area to take over as a cyclist and lead once the light turns green.
So both you and I have been to Israel, and they've been big on e-bikes, big on scooters, big on
bike and ped infrastructure.
But they allow lane splitting all the time.
And, yeah.
And you kind of get used to it. The scooters and everybody honk at you all the time just to say, I'm here. They're not mad at you. They're like, beep, 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 beep. Look out for me. And every red light you get to, the bikes, the skateboards, the scooters, the motorcycles work their way to the front.
Right.
And then they take off safely.
Yes.
Without getting run over.
Yeah.
So why shouldn't we do that for bicycles? Say, hey, you're allowed to lane split at lights. Get up there. Get out of the traffic and go on.
I'd say the answer, in my opinion, the answer would be yes. I don't know if this would be FBO's official opinion. We'd have to check with the board, of course, and discuss it. But, you know, ultimately, the people that would feel comfortable lane splitting as a cyclist are people like you and me who already feel comfortable taking a lane or riding amongst cars.
Yeah.
You know, in my mind, I want to hit that larger population where we really see culture change and we really see a impact to our congestion levels, because cars are off the road, kids are riding to school, parents are riding to work, and there are just less cars significantly because we have safe alternative infrastructure. And then those of us who want to ride on the road, sure, lane split all day, whatever.
You know? So in Flagstaff, as you're coming into Flagstaff from I-17, we're getting a new In-N-Out, which everybody's excited about that. But right after that, we're realigning the University Drive.
Mm-hmm.
So University, I don't know how this ever happened. But on the University, Northern Arizona University side, the road comes in, and then instead of going straight across Milton, it jogs for about 100 feet.
Right.
So you have to go right and then wait for a left, and then it's just a traffic nightmare.
Joe, do you know the history of that?
But anyway, so
That's being fixed.
It's being fixed, but as part of that, they had originally planned, I don't know if it's still going to go through, an underpass.
It's happening.
Is going to happen. Okay. Under Milton for pedestrians and bikes to not even have to mess with the intersection.
Right.
Just go right under and pop up out at the other side.
Issues are,
okay,
it's on the north side of the street for one, so it's a little bit tricky to get to. A lot of the student housing is on the south side of the street on University or whatever the road is. And there's a new project, Milltown, that's going to be built there as well where the old DMV was.
Right.
So they have to navigate a two-lane roundabout to get to the north side of the street, which is super sketchy. And then the ramp to get down to the tunnel is quite a ways back on both sides. So it's difficult to navigate. And then, you know, two other negative components are that as a female coming home from campus at night,
do you want to be in a tunnel?
Do you want to be in a tunnel where there might not be much visibility or other people with you?
Yeah.
And I brought that up as a council member as a concern, but I was in the minority. But the other issue is that there's no at-grade crossing. So ADOT, part of the reason why we're doing a tunnel is because ADOT didn't want to put in a at-street grade crossing.
Right.
So I think it's good ultimately that there is these types of infrastructure coming in, but at the same time, if you look into the details, it's still very much car-centric and car-prioritized.
The bottom line is we need a more robust, active transportation system.
And the bottom line is that we need leadership in our engineering and in the positions that are making these decisions that aren't just prioritizing the car.
Okay, we'll be back in a few. I'm here with Adam Schmoney and Joe Hazel from Flagstaff Biking Org.
You're listening to The Jeff Orbit Show.
Call Diamond Auto Glass first before making an auto glass claim. Now, here's why. Most insurance companies, they use a nationwide glass shop to answer their calls, and they're going to try to route you to their shop, which may very well delay the time it takes to replace your glass. Now, when you get a rock chip in your windshield, stop on by Diamond Auto Glass as soon as possible. Repairing a chip will stop it from spreading, and it'll save you from a costly windshield replacement. If you've replaced your windshield with Diamond Auto Glass before, as I have, you have a lifetime chip repair warranty, and no appointments necessary. area, just stop on in. Most chip repairs take 10 to 15 minutes. Remember, always call Diamond Auto Glass first, 928-779-4140. That's 928-779-4140, or go to thedifferenceisclear.com.
Welcome back. I'm here with Joe Hazel, Adam Shimone. We're wrapping up for the day, but I want to talk about the upcoming trail day this Saturday at... Give me some information on that, Joe.
Oh, it'll be at the Sunset Trailhead. We'll be meeting at the gate at Schultz Pass Road. We'll get vehicle access to drive up there. We're going to work on the new Climb 3 Trail. It's an event partnered with the Forest Service, and I'd be remiss to not mention all of our awesome trail program sponsors. Can't run through them right now, but thank you for your support.
Yeah, you guys do. FBO really has a huge amount of trail sponsors. Supporters, it's amazing.
And in closing, you know, thank you for having us. And I just want to let the listeners know that the beautiful thing about biking is it doesn't matter what your political background is. Cycling unites, and we all are pedestrians and cyclists, right? And so, if you want to be involved, if you want to get more involved, check out Flagstaff Biking Organization's website at flagstaffbikingorg.org. Flagstaffbiking.org. I apologize.
That's right.
And get involved. You know, we can always use support, whether it's volunteers with a trail day.
Get on our email list.
Look for opportunities to speak up and engage in the political process and be heard.
Thanks, Adam, for coming. Thank you, Joe.
Yeah,
it's been a great pleasure. And I really like your point about, you know, you've got to reach across the aisle, because I know we're all on different spectrums politically, but there's stuff we can agree on and get done. That's good for everybody.
Exactly.
Biking is a classic example. Thanks, guys. Hope to see you guys soon.
Yep. Thank you.
This is the Jeff Horovitz Show.